Second morning, let's begin. So today's daf is Lamed Beis. We're actually going to pick up from Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Just to reorient ourselves a little bit, let's actually go back a few lines. We're going to start 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines up from the bottom. So Amar Shmuel, we read this yesterday, but just because it's all part of the same sugya, it's easier to start from here. So Amar Shmuel, Chosamo Shebekarko. Remember again, this is a case of where you're tying down, let's say, the lid of a pit or of a cistern, a cave. You're tying it down to the ground. So the Shmuel says the halacha is matir avalomafkia. You can go ahead and untie the knot, but you may not unravel it. Velo chotech, nor may you cut it. What now? Shmuel's logic is because since the rope is attached to the ground, what you do to the rope ultimately again could be an issue of binyan or stira, in this case demolition. I think anything attached to the ground has the status of a structure to the of the ground as well. So therefore, Shmuel says that you could untie the knot. It's not an issue of matir, of untying, since this is a knot that is omeid, that is meant to be untied, but you may not cut it or unravel it. And Shmuel says, Echad Shabbos ve'echad Yom Tov. This is true on Shabbos as well as on Yom Tov. So the Gemara raises a kasha. Meisvei, the Gemara says, Meisvei, Chosama Shebekarka, when you have, again, the same case of these knots that are tied onto the ground, Chosama Shebekarka, you could go ahead and untie it, but you may not unravel it, nor may you cut the rope. Biyomtov, that's on Shabbos. Biyomtov, matir umafkia v'chotech. But yet on Yom Tov, you are permitted to do all of these things. So I'll say this seems to contradict what Shmuel just said, because Shmuel did not make a distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov. And both for Shabbos and Yom Tov, Shmuel said that you could untie it, but you may not unravel, nor may you go ahead and cut the rope. So the Gemara says, whose opinion is reflected in the Braise? So Hamani, Rabbi Meir, this is Rabbi Meir, the Amar, Af Poches Lechatchil. That's Rabbi Meir of our Mishnah. And remember again, what Rabbi Meir of our Mishnah said? Rabbi Meir was talking about the case of where the fruit was sealed up in a house with a brick wall. Again, the bricks were not cemented with each other, but a brick wall nevertheless. And Rabbi Meir felt that you're permitted to lechatchila remove the bricks in order to access the food. So we see that Rabbi Meir allows for certain even dramatic activities for the sake of ochal nefesh. Upligi rabbanon alei, and the rabbis argue on Rabbi Meir. Va'ana d'armik rabbanon, and I hold like the rabbanon. Fine. So says the Gemara, umi pligi rabbanon alei. Do the Rabbanan argue with Rabbi Meir when it comes to the case of knots that are tied on the ground? But Tanya, we learned Modim Chachamim Rabbi Meir b'chosama shebekarko. But yet we learned that the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Meir when it comes to the knot, these particular knots to fasten things down to the ground. That's what shebeshabbos matir avalo mafkia. That on Shabbos you're permitted to go ahead and untie it. However, you can't unravel it. V'lo chotich, nor may you cut the rope. Yom Tov matir umafkia v'chotech, and yet on Yom Tov you are permitted to go ahead and what? You are permitted to go ahead and do all of these things. You can not only untie it, but you can unravel it and cut a top of lamed base. Suppose you see from here that the rabbanon seem to be in absolute agreement with Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, "Hu d'amar ki haytana." He holds like Shmuel holds like this particular tana. What tana say? This tana. Chosamos shebekarka matir avalomafkia velochotech. So this particular Tana said that if you have knots that are tied to the ground, you can untie them, but you may not unravel them, nor may you cut them. Echad Shabbos veEchad Yom Tov, and that applies both on Shabbos as well as on Yom Tov. V'shevekli, but again, if you have a rope tied around the utensil, matir avalomafkia velochotech, then on Shabbos you can go ahead and untie it, but you may not unravel it, nor may you cut it. However, be Yom Tov, matir umafkia b'chotech. But on Yom Tov itself, you would be permitted to go ahead and what? Untie, cut, and unravel. Or untie, unravel, and cut. So we'll say, again, you see over here that Shmuel has a braisa on which to base his opinion on. And in this particular braisa, we are mechalik. We in fact do make a distinction between what we do on Shabbos and what we do on Yom Tov. Taratzta l'charesha. So you have now explained the first part. Ela seifa kasha. I put the seifa. Rashi points out over here. Taratzta l'charesha. Demilsa d'shmuel b'chosama shebekarka. D'mseilei haitana. So now you brought a proof to Shmuel's position. Fine. However, seifa kasha. Da'amr Shmuel v'shal kelim afilu b'shabbes matir u'mafkia v'chodich v'aytana tani v'shal kelim b'shabbes matir avalo mafkia v'lo chodich. So Rabbi will say, here's the issue. You've now answered up the first case of the knots attached to the ground on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But there was a second case. The second case was, what happens if you have a rope tied around a kli? So remember, again, Shmuel holds that a rope tied around the kli can be untied, unraveled, and cut even on Shabbos. What was the logic there? Remember, we said this yesterday. The logic there was, thank you. The logic there was that lemaisa, ein binyan ustir b'kelim. There are no acts of building or demolition by utensils. Remember, the whole issue over here of cutting, unraveling, untying a rope is an issue of soser, an issue of demolition. You are undoing something. But that issue of demolition only applies to what? Mm-hmm. Something that's attached to the ground. Shmuel therefore said, when it comes to, let's say, a rope tied around the utensil, you could do whatever you want with that rope. And yet, what did the Braisa say? The Braisa did not agree with this position, to which the Gemara says, no. Hamani, whose opinion is reflected here? Whose opinion is reflected? So again, both sides. The Braisa said that with a kli, b'shabbes matir avalo mafkia v'lo chotech. Beyond to Akis, remember, where Shmuel allowed for the untying, unraveling, and cutting of the rope around the utensil, both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, the Braisa only allows those activities on Yom Tov, but on Shabbos, all you're permitted to do is untie. So the Gemara says, so whose opinion is this? Hamani, Rabbi Nechemihi. Oh, I'll tell you, whose opinion is this? Rabbi Nechemia. We'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Hamani, Rabbi Nechemihi. Kilamar li olam mutr lafkia balachtoch, de'in ba mishum stira. In reality, you are permitted to go ahead and untie, unravel, and cut the rope, even on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos, right? Because again, there's no stir, there's no demolition. Ulahai tana gufei, im yachol lahafkia ulinatik biado shari. Rabbi Nechemihi. Rabbi said, listen to this. So the Gemara now is suggesting that the reason that the Braisa does not allow you to untie or to unravel, to cut the rope on Shabbos is because to unravel or to cut a rope, you require what? You require a knife. And this Braisa is reflective of the view of Rabbi Nechemia. What does Rabbi Nechemia say? Rabbi say this will take us back to our Shabbos days. The Amar kol ha'kelim ein nitalin ela derech tashmishon. Rabbi Nechemia holds that lemaisa, a utensil can only be moved for a specifically designated purpose. So what purpose does a knife have on Shabbos? Cutting food. And therefore the act of cutting or unraveling a rope is considered to be an unnecessary or inappropriate usage of the kli. And therefore Rabbi Nechemia has a very restrictive view of mukta. He holds that now you can only move it for its specifically designated purpose. That's why the Gemara is suggesting that the Braisa that says that on Shabbos you may not go ahead and unravel or cut the rope around the utensil is reflective of the view of Rabbi Nechemia. It has nothing to do with the rope in reality. It has nothing to do with an issue of stira, of demolition. It has to do with an issue of mukta, that you cannot, according to Rabbi Nechemia, move a knife for this particular purpose. So the Gemara says, one second. E Rabbi Nechemia might your Shabbos after the Yom Tov Nami. But I will say, the Gemara says, that doesn't make sense. Well, not that it doesn't make sense, but then there's a kasha. Because what did the Braisa say? When can't you unravel or cut the rope? On Shabbos. But the Braisa allowed you to do it on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, if you're telling me that this is the position of Rabbi Nechemia, the Braisa said Rabbi Nechemia's view would apply the same way on Shabbos and Yom Tov. In which the case, the same way that he restricts you from moving the knife to unravel or cut the rope on Shabbos, he would also restrict you from moving the knife to unravel or cut the rope on Yom Tov as well. And yet, the Braisa makes a distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Braisa said that unraveling and cutting is asr on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, but permitted on Yom Tov. Maybe you'll say that Rabbi Nechemia holds that there's a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov, literally resting on Shabbos versus resting on Yom Tov. Meaning, maybe you'll tell me that Rabbi Nechemia has different standards of mukta by Yom Tov than he does by Shabbos. Suppose, again, that's not a crazy thing to say, because at the end of the day, we know that there are certain built-in differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Maybe Rabbi Nechemia only holds this strict view of mukta by Yom Tov, but not by Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, "Umi Shanyalei." But is that true that Rabbi Nechemiah make a distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov? V'hatani, we learned, v'hatani chada, masikin kelim, ve'in masikin b'shivrei kelim. So we'll say, now the Gemara is going to call three brisos. But yet we learned in one brisa, that what? You can go ahead and on Yom Tov, you could burn utensils, but you may not burn broken utensils. Now, both sides, the assumption over here, if you look at Rashi, Masikin Kelim, Rashi says, Debrei Tiltol Naminin, U'metaltol Namin Lasikon, that if I want to take a utensil that is perfectly permitted for use on Yom Tov, and I want to use it as fuel for a fire, I have that right to do that. However, you may not fuel your fire with broken utensils. Now, the assumption over here is what kind of Shivrei Kelim we're talking about? Utensils that broke on Yom Tov. So meaning I can't use those. Why? Because now effectively those are mukta. Those are mukta because they were not fit for fuel at the time of the onset of Yom Tov, and therefore they're mukta. Fine, that's brisa one. Tanya idach, second brisa. Masikin bein mekelim bein b'shivrei kelim. Second brisa says that what? No, you could fuel a fire both with utensils as well as with broken utensils. Okay. Now, we'll say the assumption is that the Tana of that particular brisa just has a very relaxed view of mukta, and therefore allows it to use everything. V'tanya idach, and a third brisa said, "Ein masikin lo bekelim, lo b'shivrei kelim." And I will say, only we have these kind of teachings, right? And the third brisa says that what? You may not use either. You may not use whole utensils or broken utensils for fuel for the fire. And the Gemara says, "Umishani lo kasha." They're not contradicting each other. There are three different opinions. Harab Yehuda, Harabi Shimon, Harabi Nechemiah. To which the Gemara says three different opinions. The first price that says that you can use whole kelim, but you can't use broken kelim. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda takes a stricter view of mukta, therefore he says you can't use the broken kelim for fuel. Why? Because Lamai said they were not usable for fuel at the onset of Yom Tov, and therefore they're mukta. Second price that says you can use both is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon takes the relaxed view of mukta, therefore says even broken utensils you can go ahead and use. And the third opinion that says you may not use either is who? Is Rabbi Nechemiah. And Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Osai, holds that what? That l'maisa, you may not move a utensil for any other reason other than its primary designated use, which utensils is not for fire, it's for what? It's to hold something, to store something. So therefore, Rabbi Osai, what do you see from here? You see from here that even on Yom Tov, Rabbi Nechemiah is of the opinion that what? That a utensil may not be moved for its non-primary purpose. This, therefore, refutes what we just said before. So we're trying to find the author of the Braisa. And the author of the Braisa said, that on Yom Tov, if you have a utensil that's tied, that's, let's say, closed, it's tied, the opening is tied by a rope, it's sealed off by a rope. So the Braisa said that on Shabbos, you may untie it, but you may not unravel or cut. On Yom Tov, you may unravel and cut. So the Gemara wanted to suggest that, remember, whose opinion is that? That's Rabbi Nechemiah. Right? Going back to the previous, that's Rabbi Nechemiah. And what's the issue? The issue is not one of stira, not one of demolition, but rather one of transporting a utensil for its non-primary purpose. And the Gemara was suggesting that perhaps Rabbi Nechemiah has a difference of opinion by Shabbos and Yom Tov. By Shabbos, he's stricter, and therefore does not allow you to move the knife for its non-primary purpose of unraveling or cutting the rope. But on Yom Tov, he would allow it. Now we just see from the Braisa just quoted that Rabbi Nechemiah holds to his guns. He holds to his position both by Shabbos and by Yom Tov, and holds the same way that both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you may not move a utensil for its non-primary purpose, which then leads us back to square one. Who is the author of the Braisa? To which the Gemara answers, Trei Tanoi Vali B'Dor Rabbi Nechemiah. In reality, Rabbi Osei, there is a machlokes. There's a dispute about what Rabbi Nechemiah holds. According to one approach, Rabbi Nechemiah holds the same position by Shabbos and by Yom Tov, and holds that a utensil may not be moved for any other reason other than its primary designated purpose. That's one approach. And the other opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah, meaning the other view of Rabbi Nechemiah's opinion, is that in fact he does make a distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov and would allow you to move the knife even for its non-primary purpose on Yom Tov, which would then, and therefore again, the view in the Braisa would be reflective of this second view of Rabbi Nechemiah. Okay.
One of his views is like Shmuel.
One of his views is like He's like, sure, correct. Correct. Or that Shmuel's view is reflected in the Braisa as well. Correct. Says the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah. Ein pochasin esaner mepnei shu osekri. Also another very interesting case. You may not go ahead. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Ein pochasin esaner literally means you may not hollow out a candle. Now what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Ein pochasin esaner litol echad min habeitzim shel yotzer. You can't. Now we'll say what this literally means is you can't take one of the eggs of a craftsman. Belitchov egrofo lusocho lachkok ner. So we'll say, listen to this. Now, what does it mean, the eggs? It doesn't mean the egg. What it means is that craftsmen used to go ahead and have balls of clay. They had balls of clay. They called those beitzim. So they would take these balls of clay. They had like ready-made balls of clay, and that's what they would fashion. So we'll say a ner literally is not like a candle, but rather, again, is a receptacle for a little bit of oil and the wick, right? So how would you go ahead and make a ner out of a ball of clay? You would take the ball of clay and you would put your fist in there and you would pound out, you would just or knead out, I should say, an opening for oil and for a wick. So the Gemara Mishnah says you may not do that on Yom Tov. You may not do that on Yom Tov. Now I will say the reason for that is Rashi says mipnei she'osekli, because you are literally fashioning a utensil. Now the issue of fashioning a utensil on Yom Tov is not really one of bonus, it's not really one of building. It's more what we call makke bepatish, right? It's the idea of finishing something, of fashion. Again, there's a whole dispute about what makke bepatish is. Is it makke bepatish? One of the malachos is makke bepatish. Just a gem. Without getting into all of that, the point is it's malacha, and therefore you can't do it on Yom Tov. Ve'in osin pechamim b'Yom Tov. Furthermore, you can't make charcoal on Yom Tov. Now, this is actually very interesting. Rashi says over here, because the charcoal itself is considered to be a utensil as well. You're creating something. Now, what was charcoal used for? We'll say the charcoal was not used for cooking in the times of the Gemara, in the times of the Mishnah. Rather, what charcoal was actually used for was litzarfei zahav. It was used for people who were smelting gold, smelting or forming gold. So therefore, again, you can't make charcoal on Yom Tov, because they also, the Mishnah considers that to be the creation of an object. And you may not go ahead and cut a wick. So I'll say this would seem to be, if you have, let's say, a very long piece of material that you want to go ahead and use for a wick, but it's too long right now, you can't cut it down to size, because in essence, you are creating a new utensil as well. Rabbi Huda says, you can't cut it with a knife, but you can go ahead and what? And cut it with the fire. So we'll discuss what that means. What that means is you may singe the wick in such a way that the part that you don't need burns off. So we'll see that in the Gemara. Says the Gemara, man tana de pechisas ner manahu. Who is the opinion who holds that the creation, pechisas ner, literally means the hollowing out of the ner, of the clay, to make this ner, is considered to be the creation of a utensil? Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Meir, it reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. What does Rabbi Meir say? Disanyo, klichares me'im asay mekabel tumah. Because the Braisa said, when does an earthenware utensil, when is it mekabel tumah? Mishenigmara melachto divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir holds, as soon as you have finished working it. Rashi says, mishenigmara melachton chaki kasam, as soon as it's hollowed out. But I will say, understand, for the making of earthenware, there are two parts. There's the actual creation, the hollowing out of the utensil, and there's the placing of it in a kiln or in an oven to fire it up and to harden it. Rabbi Meir holds that an earthenware item is considered to be a utensil even before it is hardened in an oven. Just the act of hollowing it out by definition creates its utensil status. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, mishiyitzrufu b'kishan. No, it's only considered to be a kli when what? When actually it's fired up in the oven, when it's forged in the oven. So both say it would appear that our Mishnah that says that you can't take a ball of clay and hollow it out on Yom Tov would seem to reflect the view of Rabbi Meir, who holds that just simply the act of hollowing it out is in and of itself the creation of a kli. Only Abaye, Mimai. So first Abaye says, one second, who says you can compare these two cases? Because remember, both say the Gemara is quoting over here the din of Rabbi Meir by Tuma. Rabbi Meir says that a kli cheres is mekabel tuma at the time that it's hollowed out. The Gemara is extrapolating from that, that since Rabbi Meir holds that once it's hollowed out, it's mekabel tuma, that means that what? That its status as a kli occurs when it's hollowed out, and therefore our Mishnah reflects that view. Comes along Abaye, says, one second. How do you know to compare those things? Mimai, Dilma ad kan lo kam Rabbi Meir Hasam, ela dechazi lekabule b'midi. So maybe here's the difference. Why does Rabbi Meir say that when you hollow out an earthenware utensil that's considered to be a kli? Because once you hollow it out, Rabbi says, it has what's called a base kibul. It has a receptacle. And the primary definition of a utensil is that it has a receptacle. Aval, l'hocha, l'maychazi. But over here by the lamp, once you hollow it out, what is it going to be used for? And Rabbi says, apparently, you can't actually use that hollowed out piece of clay for a lamp for the simple reason that before you go ahead and forge it in fire or fire it up, so the mice, again, if you put oil in there, you know what happens? The oil will get absorbed into the clay itself. So the Gemara therefore says that I understand why Rabbi Meir holds that once you hollow out mekabel tuma, because once you hollow it out, you're capable of what? Of using it as a receptacle. Therefore, it has status of a kli. But who's to say that just because you hollow out a piece of clay that it becomes an air? It's not even usable as an air yet. To which the Gemara says, no. Lamai chazi, lekabule be pshiti. Because it will say, once you hollow out this piece of clay, even though it's not yet usable for a lamp, you know what it is usable for? You could put your money in there, right? You could put coins in there. Or in other words, again, it might not be usable yet for a lamp, but the act of hollowing out the piece of clay, you have created a significant utensil. Granted, you can't use it for your intended purpose yet, but lamaisa, it is still a usable kli, and therefore you may not go ahead and do it on Yom Tov. Ikeda Amri, others say, Amr Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Eliezer bar Tzadoki, that our Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Eliezer bar Tzadok. How do we know that? This nan. Alfasin Charonios. Now we'll see this right now. Look at Rashi. Alfasin Charonios is the second Y line in Rashi. Mefarish Takhaman, the Gemara will say this explicitly later on. These are Ka'oros Shel Bnei Ayoros. These are the plates of simple villagers. Inon Bnei Krachim Gedolim. These are people who do not live in a large city. Ve'in Makpidin Al Kelim Noim. And therefore, they don't really care so much about nice utensils. And what do? Umishenifshita ha-ka'ara shel cheres ochlin ba-basar ve'in mamtinin ashet ischakek v'titzarif pikivshan. So we'll say, listen to this. So normally, when you're making a plate, so how do you make a plate? So if you were to make a plate out of clay, the first thing you do is you'd flatten out the piece of clay, but then what would you do? So plates, remember, are not flat, right? Plates have an indentation in it. The middle is lower than the sides. So you would then depress... That's the right word. You would depress the middle and or raise the size, whatever you would do. So apparently, the simple villagers, they were simple individuals. So they would just simply flatten out the clay and already use that as a plate to go ahead and eat meat. Again, obviously, you can't use it for anything with liquid or with gravy, but for simple solids, they would go ahead and use it. So the Gemara says, Alfasin Charonios, that's what it's called. So these are the plates of villagers. Tahoros bo'ohel ames, utmeos b'masa hazav. Are what Rabbi say? If this villager's plate happens to find itself under the same roof as a corpse, so ultimately again it is tahor, but yet it is tameh if it's touched or picked up or moved by a zov. What's the logic over here? Look at Rashi. Tahoros ol ames diligabe ohel ames po'inon toch likli cheres dichsev v'chol kli pasuach mashma diyesh lo pesach. So here's the difference. When it comes to Tumas Ohel, the Torah explicitly discusses the idea that a Kli Charis, an earthenware utensil, becomes Tameh from its inside. I.e., in order for a Kli Charis to become Tameh, Tumas Ohel, Tumas Meis, it must have a receptacle. If it doesn't have a receptacle, then by definition, it does not become Tameh, Tumas Meis. On the other hand, when it comes to Tumas Zav, when it comes to, let's say, being touched or being carried by a Zav, that is Tumah that is contracted from the outside. Because it's contracted from the outside, therefore what? Therefore, it does not require a receptacle. Therefore, if you have this flat plate, it is not Mekabel Tumas Meis, but it is Mekabel Tumas Hazov. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Barab Sadok Omer, Af Tahoros B'masa Hazov. Rabbi Eliezer Bar Yaakov says, no, it is even Tahor from becoming Tumah by being touched or carried by Azov. Why? Lefi shelo nigmara melachton. Because lemaisa, it is not yet complete. It is not yet a complete kli. And any object that is not yet a complete kli is not subject, cannot be makabel tuma. Look at Rashi. Lefi shalni gemar malachton chakikasan hu nechkeku mitumas midiifog ba'alfasin am Rebbe Elazar chakika mashle mari. So we'll say, what do you see from here? Rebbe Elazar by Yaakov comes along and Rebbe Tzadok says, no, this plate, this flat plate, is not even makabel tuma from a zav. Why? Because the maisa, it's not complete. Why is it not complete, Rebbe Elazar? Because it has no base kibbutz, because it's not been hollowed out. What do you see from here, according to Rebbe Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer, Rebbe Tzadok, that the definition of a kli is what? Something that is hollowed out, which would seem to reflect very beautifully in our Mishnah. Because what does our Mishnah say? If you take a piece of clay on Yom Tov, and you go ahead and you hollow it out, you have created a kli, and you're chayiv for that. This would seem to reflect the view of Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Tzadok. To which the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye, Abaye says, one second. Dilma ad kan lo kam Rabbi Eliezer, Rebbe Tzadok, hasam, ela dechazi lekabulei beimidi. So no. Maybe here's the difference. The difference over here is that maybe Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Tzadok says, in that case, look at Rashi. Dechazi lekabulei midi mishenichkeku umiu kodem chakika lo disofan lichakek. So we'll say it's only in a case where lemaisa the object has the ability to go ahead and actually hold something that Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Tzadok would say that it's a kibul that has a base kli. But here, what is it usable for? To which the Gemara gives the same answer. Likabule bei pshiti. It is usable in some, even though it's not usable for an heir, but it's usable in some basic form to be able to go ahead and hold coins. Okay, says the Gemara. The Gemara just goes back for just a moment. Tan Rabbanan in pokas in asaner. We have a braisa that supports this as well. You may not go ahead and hollow out a piece of clay to be used as an heir on Yom Tov. Furthermore, ve'in osin alfasin charanios b'Yom Tov. You may not go ahead and make these alfasin charanios. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel matir ba'alfasin charanios. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel allows you to go ahead and make alfasin charanios. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel holds that lamaisa the alfasin charanios do not constitute a kli because there is no depression, there is no base kibul. Therefore, he allows you to make it on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, by the way, my charanios, what does charanios mean? Rabbi Yehuda Iranios. Okay. My Iranios. That's very helpful. What is Iranios? Amra Abaye Tsoi Chakliyosa. I will say Tsoi means plates. Chakliyosa means villagers. These are the plates of simple villagers. The Ein Osin Pechamin. And there will say now the Gemara goes on. So okay, so now we've taken care of the first part of the Mishnah that you may not take the ball of clay and go ahead and hollow it out. We have two different possibilities, either Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Eliezer but Rabbi Tzadok, as to whose opinion is reflected here in the Mishnah. So now the Gemara moves on to the next case. You can't make charcoal on Yom Tov. And I will say, remember again, the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. Lemay Chazi, what would charcoal be usable for? And I will say, understand that, remember, as I mentioned in the Mishnah, they were not using charcoal to, it's clear that they did not use charcoal to cook on Yom Tov. Because again, if they used charcoal to cook on Yom Tov, the Gemara wouldn't have said, Lemay Chazi, what is it usable for? It's obviously what it's usable for. You want to grill, right? You want to cook on Yom Tov. So they clearly were not using charcoal for the sake of cooking. So the Gemara says, Lemay Chazi, what is it usable? Now remember, Rashi in the Mishnah already pointed out that what was charcoal used for? Charcoal was used for gold working. So the Gemara says, okay, you can't work gold on Yom Tov. So obviously you can't make charcoal on Yom Tov. Tani Rabbi Chia, no. Lo nitzuchat la lemosran lu'ul yorin. Now I'll tell you what it was used before, to go ahead and make it in order to give it over. Rabbi will say, ul yorin are the bathhouse attendants. Rashi says over here, lu'ul yorin, mechami chamin umer chatzos, va'af agab l'tzorech yom tov hein osin. So I'll say, what happened? I want to make charcoal to give to the bathhouse attendants to heat up the bathhouse, which we'll see is permitted on Yom Tov. Again, also when you get into the discussion about bathing on Yom Tov, we touched on it a little bit earlier already. We'll talk about it later on in this Masechta. So I want to go ahead and give it to the bathhouse attendants to heat up the bathhouse for Yom Tov. Upo bayom mishari. But is it permitted to go ahead and bathe on Yom Tov? Rashi says, umishari lohachim v'halo gozru ala rechitz b'masecha Shabbos v'afilu hochmim b'od yom mechoshkin lahachim chame lohodromom. I've also said there is a rabbinic prohibition against bathing on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Even with what? Even with water that was heated before Shabbos and Yom Tov. We saw this in Masechah Shabbos. This was what's called the Gzeiras Merachatz. Because remember what was happening is, originally people were bathing in water that was heated up prior to Shabbos and Yom Tov. And then what happened? The bathhouse attendants were in fact warming it up on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And were claiming they did it before. Therefore the rabbis outlawed hot bathing on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, so you can't do, so what are you doing? What do you mean you're making charcoal in order to give it over to the bathhouse attendants? The bathhouse attendants aren't allowed to warm up water on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even with, or actually, this is really on Yom Tov. They're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov. To which the Gemara says, Ki da amar rava lahazia. Oh, what are we talking about over here? For the sauna. This is not for bathing. This is for the shvitz. The kodem gezerah. And we're talking about now before the gezerah. Hachanami lahazia v'kodem gezerah. Look at Rashi. Lahazia. Machnis hapicham l'socho u'bnei adam nichnasin l'mazien. Kodem shegazra alazia nishnes mishnazu. So we'll say, listen to this. So again, apparently, even after they outlawed bathing, it was still permitted to go to the shvitz on Yom Tov. Therefore, Lemais, what the Gemara is talking about over here is this Mishnah was written, and then later on they outlawed usage of the sauna as well. So the Gemara says that this Mishnah was recorded prior to that Gezerah. So this Mishnah says that you can't go ahead and make Pechamin, even though what? Even though technically you might have thought that it would have been okay, since you could have given it over to the bathhouse attendants to use to go ahead and heat up the shvitz. Kamash Malon, you can't do it because the creation of the charcoal itself is like the creation of a kli. Okay.
Why couldn't the Gemara have said it was before the first exam? The regular pizza exam? Why does it have to choose a shvitz?
So, because the Gemara seems to feel that there's no way this Mishnah, because the Gzira for the Merchatz was much earlier on. So the Gemara feels, I guess it's just chronologically, it's more feasible that this would have been before Gzira Lahazia than before Gzira Merchatz, chronologically. So the Gemara says, you can't cut the wick into two. So remember again, the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda said, you can't cut it with a knife, but you can cut it with, you can cut it with a fire. So the Gemara says, why can't you cut it with a knife? Why? Because also because lemaisa, you are creating a utensil. The act of cutting a wick in two is creating a utensil because now you have created a functional wick. But you can make the same argument, even if you singe the wick in the middle and go ahead and create two independent wicks, you are also creating a new utensil. To which the Gemara says, Tani Rabbi Chiya, Chotcha Ba'ar B'fi Shtei Neros. Oh, what's the case of Rabbi Osai? You have one long wick that you need to make into two. So if you cut it, it's very clear that you are actively creating something. So what's the case over here? Well, you have one long piece of material. You place the ends each in their own nair, in their own receptacle. And what do? You light the middle. So when you light the middle, effectively what ends up happening is the two wicks separate, but that doesn't have the appearance that you are actively creating two new wicks. Why? Because what are you doing? As far as you're concerned, your act has the appearance of just kindling the wick. Therefore, because it doesn't have the same appearance of the as creating something, therefore Rabbi Yehuda permits it. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Rav Nosel bar Abba Amar Rav, muchtin es hapsil b'yom tov. You are permitted to trim a wick on Yom Tov. My mochtin. What does that mean to trim a wick? Amar Rav Chinna bar Shalmiya mishmei derav la'aduye chushcha. To remove the charred part on the top. So I guess if you remove the charred part on the top, the wick will burn a little bit better. So you're permitted to do this on Yom Tov. Tani bar Kapra. Vodvram ne'emru b'psila. There are six things that were said about a wick. Gimel la'hakmer v'gimel la'hakil. Three of them were stringent and three of them were lenient. So what are the three that are stringent? Ein gold lilos l'chatchil. You can't twist. I mean, you can't create a wick l'chatchil. You can't twist the fabric into a wick l'chatchil on Yom Tov. That's fashioning it. Ve'ein mahav havin. Osabor, you can't singe it in the fire. These are all things, either the creation of the wick or what allows it to ultimately burn. And you can't cut a wick into two, thereby creating a wick. See, these are all three chumras that you can't do by wick because each of them effectively are creating or readying the wick for use. Lahakel, what are the kulas? You can press the wicks. I mean, if it's already twisted, you can press it to make it a little bit more solid. V'shorin b'shemen, you could soak it in oil so that it burns better. And if you have the two ends of a long wick in two different utensils, you could singe the middle, you could kindle the middle and effectively make it into two different wicks. V'amrav nasan bar abba, amrav atiri badal. So we'll say now the Gemara quotes a different discussion only because it relates to some of the opinions we quoted earlier. Rav Nosson bar Abba said, in the name of Rav, Atirei Babel Yardei Gehenim. The rich men of Babel are going to Gehenim. Okay, good morning. Right, so now, so I'll say, look at Rashi over here for just a moment. Yardim Gehenim Heim, Sheina Merachamim Lasos Tzedakah. Because the rich men of Gehenna were men of means, they were wealthy individuals, but they did not give tzedakah properly. So Kiha, the Gemara tells a story, an example of this. Kiha, the Shabsai Bar Merenos, like the story of Shabsai Bar Merenos, what happened with him? Ikla leBavel, he went to Bavel, bought minayu iska velo yahavele. So I will say he wanted iska. Iska means merchandise. And I will say what that means is Rashi says, schora lehistaker lemachzis kas. So what ended up happening is these merchants would take merchandise from wealthier people. They would take they would sell it, and they would split the profits in half. So apparently, Shabsai Bar Merenos could not get any business. No one would help him in Yom Tov. In Bavel, Mezon Nami Lo Zainu. So he couldn't get business. So if he couldn't get business, he wasn't able to make money. So he became a shtickel destitute. So what happened? No one would help him with food. No one would give him anything to eat. Amar Hani Me'erev Rav Kasa. So we'll say Shabsai Bar Merenos makes a very strong statement. He says these men must be the descendants of the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav, remember, refers to the group of Egyptians that left with the Jews when we left Egypt, and ultimately, again, were the source of many problems and difficulties throughout our years in the desert. So Shabsai Bar Merenos says people who are so uncharitable, people who are so unkind, they can't be really part of Klal Yisrael. They must be the descendants of the Erev Rav. And look what he said. It's actually quite beautiful. The pasuk says over here, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you rachamim, v'nasan lecha rachamim, v'richam cho. Right? And you will be, and he will, or I should say, v'nasan lecha, you will give you compassion, v'richam cho, and you will be compassionate. Kol ha'merachim al abrios, whoever is compassionate for others, it's such a beautiful Gemara. So the hallmark of the Jewish people is compassion. If you are compassionate, then ultimately, again, that shows that you are the offspring of Avram Avinu. And anyone who is not compassionate or empathic, it is clear that you are not from the descendants of Avram Avinu. There's a problem with your yichus. The Gemara actually has a couple of different examples of things like this, where character traits say a lot about the people. So for example, the Gemara also says, people who always get angry, it's actually very strong. The Gemara says, people who have anger issues, the Gemara says, chances are they're mamzerim. It's actually quite strong. Try that in your next fight, right? The Gemara says, because anger is such a despicable midah, and people who have temper problems, that shows that there is a certain, what we'll call, a yichus, or genetic imbalance within the individual. That's not the way a Jew behaves. If a person has that type of midah problem, that's a pigam in who they are. So the Gemara attributes it literally to mamzerus. Here, you're not empathic, you're not compassionate, there's something wrong with your Jewish DNA. It's off, because it's part of our DNA from Avraham Avinu to be compassionate and empathic, so therefore, I must be not a descendant of Avraham Avinu. But Amrav Nasan Bar Abba Amrav. So we'll say now the Gemara gets into a little bit more agarata. Rav Nasan Bar Abba said in the name of Rav, Kala Metzapa Al Shulchan Achirim, Olam Choshach Ba'ado. Rav will say anyone literally who has to look to the table of another, which means anyone who is dependent on someone else, the world is a dark place for him. Shene emar, no day to lechem aye. He looks around wondering, where is my bread? Yada ki nachon biyado yom choshech. He knows that the day of darkness is readily at hand. So we'll say the idea that someone, again, this doesn't even need explanation, someone who is dependent, no worse feeling than having to be dependent on someone else, the world becomes dark. Rav Chista amar af chayov einam chayim. Rav Chista says that again, I will say it's not just the pshat that his life is a little bit difficult, but such a life is not even a life. A person comes to a point where they feel that this is not even a life worth living. Tan Rabbanon, Gimel Chayehem Enam Chayim. I will say it's actually an amazing Gemara. There are three people, literally, whose lives are not lives, meaning three people whose existence is profoundly compromised. The Elohim, these are the three people. Hametzapa L'Shulchan Chaveiro. Someone who has to be dependent on his friend. Literally, he looks towards his front table. This one is interesting. Umisha ishto mosheles alav. Someone who has an overbearing wife. Right? So a person who has an overbearing wife. Again, mosheles is actually a very strong lashon that she controls him. She rules him. So someone who has, I guess, the modern day equivalent to, well, I won't say. Okay, so I have to ask my wife. Come on, make a decision. I have to ask my wife. So, okay, so Imishi Ishtomo Shala Salov. So, someone ultimately, again, whose wife totally rules over him. Umishi Yisurin Moshe Mugufo. And someone who experiences physical suffering. Right, so ultimately, again, I will say viso, again, physical suffering also, which is quite interesting. We know a person physically suffers, it overtakes the entirety of their existence. V'yeshom is actually very interesting, and there are others who add a fourth. Misha'in lo ela chaluk echad. Someone who only has one shirt. I will say, what's the issue with someone who only has one shirt? So Rashi points out, chances are it'll become infested with lice. Because it'll become infested with lice, again, ultimately, this makes a person's life exceptionally difficult. The Tanakama, why doesn't the Tanakama include the one shirt person in his list? Efshar deme'ayin bimane. Because at the end of the day, you can always examine your clothing and go ahead and delouse it. Okay, says the Mishnah. Let's at least just take a quick look. We'll do the Mishnah, then we'll have to stop. Ein shovrin es acheres ve'in chotchin es hanayar litzlos lo b'maliach. You cannot go ahead. You can't. Also, what the Gemara is talking about over here is when you used to roast a piece of fish or cook a piece of fish over the fire. Apparently, again, you can't cook fish directly on the metal because it'll burn the fish. So what they used to have to do is they used to have to put something between the fish and the actual piece of metal over which they were cooking it. So, for example, what would they do? They would often take a pottery shard, or for that matter, they take a piece of paper. It doesn't literally mean paper over here. It can mean parchment. It can mean a piece of flattened out reed. But they would take something. So you can't go ahead and break. You can't go ahead and break cheres. You can't break an earthenware utensil, and you can't go ahead and cut a piece of paper, litzlos bomaliach, to go ahead and to roast a piece of fish on top of it. And the logic behind that is because the act of breaking the utensil, the act of going ahead and cutting the piece of paper, ultimately, again, is the fashioning of it into a kli. Ve'in garfin tanar v'kirayim, you can't go ahead and clean out. Kind of a camera also means you can't clean out an oven. You know what's actually? We're going to stop over here. We're going to pick up with the Mishnah in Yerutz Hashem tomorrow. We're going to start the daf at 5:45 tomorrow. It's the only way to get through all of this. So we'll Yerutz Hashem continue Das Hatzmacha on Monday. So tomorrow we begin 5:45 with the Mishnah. Yeah, I don't know, you have to make the charcoal.